Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander. Once again, we'd like to welcome you to the Socialist Insight. Today we have Zach Goldstein. He has worked with the Alexander Mendoza campaign in 2012, and also he is a young socialist revolutionary. And Zach, I'd like to welcome you to the program today. Thanks, on very short notice, I invited you, but again, welcome to the program today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Stuart. It's a pleasure to be here.
Zach, what I'd like for you to do, as I do in most programs, I'd like for you to take maybe around a minute or so just to share a little bit about yourself. I know you just recently graduated from high school. I believe you're now in college. But just share a little bit about yourself and why you have such an interest in left politics.
Well, yeah, I just graduated from high school. And throughout high school, I took many social studies classes and, you know, studying various political and economic systems. And one thing that really caught my eye was socialism and the democratic socialist movement. I think that the major reason why it really caught my eye was because it was a system that put people before profits. It wasn't a system where the main primary focus was how much money you can earn, but it was what good you can contribute to society. And, you know, through continuing to study various forms of socialism in the past and what can be done in the future, got me just really interested overall in left politics. And so I joined the Socialist Party USA and have been an active member in left politics for a little over a year now. And I can't say I have no regrets, and it's a great place to spend my time.
Well, when you got involved all the way. I met you just a little over a year ago, and you were very enthusiastic about the Socialist Party USA, and that enthusiasm is still there in everything that you have done, especially working most recently with the Alexander Mendoza campaign. Now, when you were working with the campaign, Zach, one of the things that you were doing, you were working as the social media coordinator. And as I mentioned, that was a campaign, the Alexander Mendoza campaign in 2012. I would just like to ask you, Zach, what did you do to have such a very successful media campaign to help the Alexander Mendoza campaign reach millions of people throughout the U.S. and even worldwide? And explain, what did you do to create such a successful campaign?
Well, I was the national social media coordinator for the Stuart Alexander, Alex Mendoza presidential campaign. What that basically entailed was I, along with the campaign committee, would help manage our social media, whether that was on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, all sorts of mediums. And we would give out constant updates, statuses, tweets, what have you, on any news concerning the presidential campaign for the Socialist Party USA, and as well as the greater socialist movement. And what would entail in this specific job was it was always a 24/7 job. The internet never sleeps. There would always be people commenting, asking questions, giving comments, wanting to know more information. So I would help facilitate and try to answer questions to the best of my ability, would give people the necessary information to either join the party, to contribute to the campaign in whatever way they can. And it was a very hands-on job. And we got not just in how many likes or how many retweets we got on all of these social media networks, but it really got people interested in the movement and in the party specifically about what we can offer to working people and to humanity across the world.
Now, I know there are many sources that you can be able to utilize in a effective media campaign. What were some of the tools that you used, such as the social medias? I know it was Twitter, Facebook. And how important are these tools? What are the tools that are out there, and how did you make those work?
Well, it's very important, I think, in the 21st century, and specifically now, that presidential campaigns, not only just presidential, but anything from the local, state, to federal level, utilizes social media. Social media has led to something as large as a revolution. I mean, the Twitter revolution, as it's called, spread from Tunisia to Egypt to all these countries across the Middle East, and have even helped organizations such as Occupy or Anonymous spread a system of economic justice and economic equality. It's very important for campaigns in the electoral arena to utilize social media because that's the clearest way of how to bring out your message and appeal to people who are growing up in this time and in this era. 2012 was the first time in politics where a political party, and you saw this very much true in the Barack Obama campaign for the Democrats, that a massive amount of time and effort and money from a political party was spent on advertising through social media means. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very much an important aspect of politics.
Now, we realize how important and how powerful it is. One of the campaign tools that I've used over the past few years, and just by putting information out there, has been IndyMedia, whether San Francisco Bay IndyMedia, Los Angeles IndyMedia. And years ago, I would have people, this was 7-8 years ago, they would, I would say around 6 or 7 years ago, they were saying that you need to use IndyMedia because you saw it all over the country, and now you're seeing many of these sites close down, whether it's been in Cleveland, whether it was in New York, whether it was in Vermont, wherever across the country. And many of these sites and these tools have become a threat to the government. Now, what you're saying and what I see is that the left has very effectively in the past have utilized this to be able to reach millions of people and also to bolster support for the left movement. But today, I want to ask, is the left effectively utilizing the various social medias that are out there?
That's an excellent question. I think it's a learning process. It's a trial and error process. I know from my own personal experience, as the national social media coordinator, I learned a lot as I went along. Overall in the left, in politics, in the United States at least, I think they're beginning to utilize the power of social media and Facebook and Twitter and these elements that we can push forward our concepts of how society should be structured. And up until this point, we've been using our, you know, parties' newspapers or just bulletins in local shops across, you know, many cities across the country. But now we can use these elements to appeal to tens of thousands and millions of people. I think the left in particular is very keen in using this technology. For instance, Occupy, Wall Street, Occupy Oakland, and every single Occupy encampment have used Facebook and Twitter to constantly update their followers and participants and activists on the latest news, and I think that Occupy is a perfect example of how the left is really using media to their own advantage.
Now, even though the left is utilizing this, and obviously when we see many of the revolutions that are taking place in other countries, and even when you look at aspects of the revolution that's taking place in this country, how much of a threat is that becoming to the government? Because the governments of the world, and even the U.S. government, we see them more and more trying to infiltrate and trying to be able to lessen the impact of these very social medias. How much of a threat is that to the government? Because myself, I see that it's a major threat that the government is constantly monitoring.
Well, as governments take more and more of a corporate mentality, I think that social media is definitely a threat. Look no further than WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
Good
point. He's cooped up in an embassy in, you know, what was the heart of the old imperialist world, the United Kingdom. I think that having a voice and having a medium to spread that voice to millions of people, such as social media, is a threat to the establishment. It's a threat to the status quo, the way things were and the way things are. Because we present things as the way they could be. And people in power in these corporate entities and in government in general across the world fear that change. They fear that they are on the losing side, so they take a very reactionary, very conservative position, and in doing so, want to try to censor us. It's a very classic authoritarian means of doing it, but now, you know, technology pushes forward sort of that conflict of interest. So yeah, it's overall social media and just the internet in general is a very threatening entity towards the established powers that be.
Well, over the course of the Alexander Mendoza campaign, and of course you were on top of your game the whole time during this campaign, what kind of feedback did you get from people that were staying in touch with the campaign? What did you see on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis? Because you were always given these huge numbers of people that were following the website, they were following us on Twitter, but what kind of feedback did you get? Could you just share with our listeners?
Yeah. So one of the things that I wanted to do when I was approached with this task was I wanted to give people the opportunity to be involved. I wanted them to act like their comments would be heard and that their questions would be answered to the best of my ability. So whenever there was a comment or a question posed on some Facebook status or on some tweet or post of any type, I would always try to immediately respond to that specific person to the best of my ability. And people really appreciated sort of this ability to reach out to them specifically. Because in the vast range that is the internet and social media, and specifically, when you pose a question to a Facebook page or to a Twitter account, you may not necessarily get a response back. And I wanted, as the best of my ability, to reach back to that person, who had an interest in what we were doing. So the feedback was very positive. People kept on, you know, saying that, you know, out of most third-party social media efforts, we had the most active participant rate in terms of, you know, really communicating with each and every person who is concerned about the election and about the movement in general. So the feedback was very positive and very constructive.
What type of communication tools do most young people use, that they use most frequently, between Twitter, Facebook, the other sources?
Yeah, I mean,
what do they use?
Yeah, Twitter and Facebook seem to be the most popular, most well-used social media sites. And I think the reason is because you can there's such a wide range of things you can do with these mediums. You know, you can specifically send one person a message, or you can send that message to a group, or you can send that message to the entire world. And I think that the way we sort of are in a mentality of globalization, and I think the one good aspect of globalization is that everything can be spread across the world. And while, yes, corporations are going across borders, but also ideas and concepts are going across borders. Ideas of specifically socialism and of democracy are going across borders. And I think that young people are really taking on to that, so they use mediums like Facebook and Twitter to get these ideas out. So I think that social media outlets are probably the most well used to get a message out.
Now, when I consider what you did in not even 12 months working with one campaign, and I consider what a national organization such as the Socialist Party USA or the Freedom Socialist Party or other left groups that are out there, what they're doing, why, if it happens during a campaign, why don't these organizations use those tools and they use individuals like you on a weekly basis to share what they're doing outside of just a local, state, or national campaign? Wouldn't it be very beneficial that they use those organizations that back candidates use these tools on a regular basis?
No, that's certainly an interesting question that you pose. I think the reason why...
Because I don't see it happening out there outside of when they work with campaigns. And you have a lot of talent that you bring to the table.
I think the reason why is because typically, and you see this generally in election years, political parties and political organizations and entities are very high-tech during an election year or midterm election year. And when there's a huge election happening during one specific year, everyone's on their game, everyone's at their height of always constantly giving out updates and tweets and posts and statuses. I think during off-election years, political entities or organizations or parties don't necessarily continue that sort of momentum that they're building, which is a shame, and I agree with you, which is a shame. I think that, especially on the left, we need to continue that momentum even after the election is over and the campaign season has stopped. We need to continue this momentum because people need to maintain their interest. We need to maintain people's interest in specifically socialism and democracy. And it's a shame that organizations don't continue that momentum. It's a hard thing to maintain, for sure, as I well know, but it's definitely a shame.
What I see is, like, during an election cycle, you have organizations such as SPUSA and other left groups as well. You'll see the membership, there's a surge of membership, sometimes between 8 to maybe around 12% in membership. And, of course, they're always losing and gaining members. But what I can see is it would be very beneficial if they kept that momentum going. Obviously, it needs to be a total campaign. How are you going to be building membership, dissemination of information, making certain that you have people that can represent those organizations. But it's the gains that you make over an election cycle, it's very important to build on that. And what I see is communication is a vital element. Now, yourself, you're working as the local chairperson there in the Oakland area for the SPUSA. And how do you use many of these tools for building a local there in the northern part of the state?
It's sort of the same strategy. You specifically target people who you know or people who are interested in a particular subject, in this case, the socialist movement, in the area where you live. And I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, so I target the counties around that area of various organizations and entities that have a similar message and try to say, let's come together, let's create a chapter to further push the message of democratic socialism. And it's the same thing as the national campaign, just specifically tailored to a local area. So you still pump out a message, you throw it out to the world and see what sticks. And people, and you know, it might not be a lot at first, but people start to take an interest and start responding back to you and say, hey, I'm interested, let's get something going.
Right. Today we have Zach Goldstein. He's with the Socialist Party USA, and he also worked with the Alexander Mendoza campaign in 2012. His expertise is in working with youth and also working with the various social medias. And again, I would like to say that we appreciate Zach joining the program today. Also, that I might mention that you can send in any of your comments or be able to contact the Socialist Insight just by going to the StuartAlexanderCares.com. And now we have a contact link where you can be able to contact us. Any questions that you would like to, or comments that you have for regarding this program, and any comments that you have in regards to guests that come on the program, we would love for you to share that with us today, and also just click on that link at any time. Zach, we just want to get a little bit more into what are some of the challenges yourself just building the local there, the Socialist Party USA local there in the Bay Area. What are some of the major challenges you have had in regards to building that organization and also membership within that area? And, of course, the Oakland area is a very large area within Northern California. But what, just share some of those challenges.
Yeah, it's. I think it's true of any local organization. It's the motivation and the time and the effort to create a local chapter of a larger organization. Also, it's pretty much combating the trying to get around the idea of entering into a socialist organization. Because unfortunately, while according to recent Pew polls, socialism is gaining momentum in its favorability amongst the American people, it's still a challenging subject to really grasp in terms of coming out as a socialist. So in terms of local organizations, and local organizing, it's very much about the momentum, and it's about the time and the effort, and specifically trying to get people excited about coming together and planning out events, going to protests such as the Occupy movement, or going to something as simple as a school board meeting or a city council meeting, and asking questions that need to be asked, or even answering questions that politicians don't have the guts to answer correctly. So it's very much difficult because, you know, local organizing definitely has its setbacks, and you need to really maintain a good attitude and just trying to get everyone together and to find events that are relevant to your organization and go to them. Show your true colors, and you know, something as simple as passing out flyers or, again, utilizing social media and telling people we'll be at this particular place at this particular time to see who shows up. And if it's one person who shows up, then that's still a successful endeavor, because you get one person interested, and that's one more person than you have the day before.
When you introduce yourself as a socialist, and I can think about when I became a socialist back in the 90s, and you just start sharing some of your ideas, and as soon as they knew you were a socialist, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with socialism or communism. But now today, I see the attitudes are changing, and they're changing quickly with younger people. But what is the level of interest that you see with people when you talk to them about yourself being a socialist and sharing ideas of what socialism what it has to offer? What level of interest do you see among young people today?
I think the level is definitely rising. I think when I present myself as a socialist, people are always curious to ask. The first question is, what's socialism? Because I think there's definitely a past history of equating socialism with various countries of the past who have sort of taken that name and have twisted it into something that is, well, not socialism. And specifically my generation, we are the first generation to live outside of the exterior of the Cold War, and that shadow's been lifted. So we have sort of had this free reign of truly exploring what socialism is. And people who I encounter who ask what socialism is, I just explain to them, it's democracy at its finest. It's democracy in the workplace. It is giving profit to the people who deserve it, and that is the working class. And people are very interested, and sometimes even positively interested in further exploring that movement.
When we look at the makeup of the political spectrum, and we can consider that one-third of the nation now has a favorable opinion of socialism. Just recently, there was a poll showing that Democrats, there's 53% of all Democrats now have a favorable opinion regarding socialism. Why aren't people lining up to become part of the socialist movement or to join this revolutionary movement? Why not?
It's a very
tricky
question. And I think what I said earlier about just the word socialism can be a little intimidating. And I don't blame people. For the past, I would want to say century, the United States government has demonized the socialist movement because it's been afraid that if socialists take power through democratic means, and I want to stress that, through democratic means, that there will be real change in this country, that there would be a real sense of democracy in this country. And I think that you'll begin to discover as time goes on, as particularly my generation grows up and the generation after us comes into this world, that more people will not only be interested, as this Pew poll suggests and proves, but more people will be joining the movement and joining organizations that have a strong tie to the greater socialist movement. I think
so. A lot of it has to do with the propaganda machine that the U.S. government has going to demonize what socialism has.
Exactly. I think it's also just very much it's a sign of the times. I think with Occupy coming out in the past few years and the Arab Spring coming out in the past few years and all these other movements, I think it's a sign of the times that people are slowly beginning to come around to the idea of socialism, and these people are particularly in their youth who may have not grown up with this sort of shadowy, sort of Cold War-ish world.
How did the Occupy movement identify, or did they identify with socialism, or did they just, was there any type of identity that could be that was realized through that movement? And I know you've been very involved with it yourself.
I can't speak for the entire Occupy movement.
And not
speaking
for Occupy, just your opinion.
Yeah, I think, at least from what I've seen in Occupy Oakland, because that's the experience I had personally, is that there were definitely a lot of strong ties to what socialists advocate for. People wanted democracy in the workplace. People wanted socialized medicine. People wanted the working class to take control of the means of production. And that those are, you know, the basic ideals of what every socialist advocates.
Right.
They wanted to sum it up, they wanted democracy in the world.
Right.
And I think that's what every socialist wants. Now, the problem that Occupy comes under fire for, especially from the right, is that they had no message, or they had, no organizational effort, which is total BS. They were a decentralized movement that really showed what true democracy can be like with General Assemblies and with the way they operated. And especially from what I saw in Occupy Oakland, this was most true. Now, whether they identified as a socialist when they called themselves socialists, you know, that's up for debate. I don't think everyone who was involved in Occupy Oakland may have been a socialist or called themselves a socialist, but at least were accepting of ideals that socialists advocate. I think everybody in the Occupy movement, it's safe to say, wants democracy in the workplace and wants the working class to rise up in revolution and wants socialized medicine or at least a single-payer health care system.
I want to ask you, what toward the end of the 2012 election, I saw a lot of information going over various Occupy sites, and that support was directed toward Barack Obama. And I'm talking about September and October, and you start seeing more and more of that movement giving support for Barack Obama. Was there a movement going on within the movement to help the 2012 campaign within the Occupy movement for President Obama?
Yeah, that's always the trap that I think the left falls under. Every time when it comes close to Election Day, whether it's a midterm or a presidential election year, the left, and I'm not going to say this about the entire left, certainly certain aspects, though, fold to the Democratic Party, because it's always the argument that, well, the Democrats are, you know, they're not the best people in the world, but the Republicans are worse.
Right.
The classic lesser of the two evils.
Right.
And I think that there were certain elements who may have used the name Occupy or trying to push people in that direction towards supporting Barack Obama and other Democratic candidates. But I don't think they were truly representative of what the Occupy movement was. A lot of people have critiques that the Occupy movement didn't endorse a presidential candidate, whether that has been Barack Obama or some socialist running such as yourself or another presidential candidate. But I think it was a smart move that they didn't endorse someone because it maintains the idea that it's sort of above electoral politics. And, you know, so when it goes back to, you know, the Occupy movement, you know, trying to push Barack Obama for a second term, I think it was just people and certain organizations such as MoveOn.org and other Democratic entities trying to co-opt part of the movement into bringing them into the Democratic Party. So overall, I don't think that that was very much a representation of the Occupy movement.
And one of the things, and of course the Socialist Party USA, what they have not done is they have really remained very much apart from the Occupy movement. In other words, they're not trying to go in and co-opt any parts of that movement, but they have definitely supported that. And of course, I sort of went off on a tangent when I was talking about some of the things that that you've been doing, working within that area to build the campaign. But all of it's relevant, and you know, people that they look at what they're going to support, whether it's SPUSA supporting left candidates, and as we saw during the campaign, much of that support of the Occupy. And also we see it all the time with unions, how the Democrats have become very effective co-opting various left groups. And that's one of the reasons why you look at people possibly coming and joining and becoming part of an organization such as what both of us are a member of. They throw that support at those critical times toward not left candidates, but they go to the middle, and sometimes they even go to the right. But I just want to speak in one more area in regards to your leadership, working with the SPUSA as the local chair there. Working as the chair, the SPUSA, they have membership which is coordinated and is being done on a national level. But only in your opinion, Zach, should membership with the Socialist Party USA, in your opinion, be handled more so on a state-by-state level, or should it be done on a national level?
Certainly an interesting question. I hate to be a cop-out, but I think probably both.
Mm-hmm.
I think there can be a way where organizational efforts from the fiscal side to the actual outreach side of organizations should be handled by both the state and the national level. The national level can certainly take on the responsibility of sort of the general overarching issues that the country faces, and then the states can get into what specifically their areas of interest may be, because each state faces their own issues and problems that could be connected to the national level, of course. So I think both levels of the party need to work together in creating sort of a hybrid of the two. So I would say both. I don't particularly lean in one way or the other, but yeah, I would say both.
Right. I'm going to just once again, I just want to introduce Jack. Once again, I would like to introduce Zach Goldstein. He is on as our guest today. He is a young revolutionary working with the Socialist Party USA. And also, Zach, he worked with the Alexander Mendoza campaign in 2012. He is very involved with the various social medias. And in addition to that, Zach has done a lot of outreach in the Northern California area and even working as the local chair in the Oakland and San Francisco Bay Area. And today he's sharing many of his expertise in regards to what he is doing, not only organizing youth, but organizing the socialist movement in that area. And if you have any comments that you'd like to share with the program, you can go to the StuartAlexanderCares.com. And now we have a contact link that you can be able to share any contact, make contact, share any comments, and even comments that you have that you'd like to share with our guests. And that's StuartAlexanderCares.com. And just feel free to share whatever comments you have from week to week. And also, we welcome you to join in our program and just to call in. And if you have any comments for our guests or for me, we would love for you to share those comments. Zach, what we're going to do right now, we're going to get into a little bit, a couple more areas before we wrap up our program today. And of course, yourself, I know you're a strong believer in socialism and what it has to offer, but obviously there are still millions of people that believe that there's some type of hope that lies within capitalism. But has capitalism, in your opinion, Zach, has capitalism failed working people, and why are so many people losing hope in capitalism today?
I think capitalism has completely failed the working class. I don't want a system where there's going to be a boom and bust cycle every 7 or so years. It's ridiculous. I want there to be a thriving economy. I want there to be a thriving working class. I want there to be a thriving species of humanity that can reach its full potential. I want to move beyond the profit gain and become something better than who we are. I think that capitalism has advanced to its final stage and can't go any further. It's done what it could, and now we need to move on. We need to move on to a better and brighter system of not only economics or politics, but of, as the name implies, social, as in interacting with one another on a personal level. I think that capitalism has failed ultimately because it puts profit before the needs of the people. It's greed before need.
Right.
In a system, when when you have approximately 1,407 brands of toothpaste, but you only have two choices for President of the United States, there is a problem. There is an absolute problem with that. I think
right.
socialism gives not only hope and change to people, to coin a term from a certain Democratic candidate, but it gives actual concrete reality to people's needs.
Right.
So, yes, capitalism has completely failed. We've seen recently with the Great Recession of 2007 to 2008, and it's a blowback in the Arab Spring and in the Occupy movement. I mean, in the next 10 to 20 years, we'll have another recession, and then another,
right.
and then another, until people finally wake up from this hypnotic boom and bust cycle.
Right. Well, you know, Karl Marx, he had stated that it's already planned in the system where you have a depression or recession every 150 years. And now we've gotten it down. We went from 75-year cycles. Now we're in 15-year cycles. And as you mentioned, we're still in a depression today. When you consider the successes that Wall Street is having today, and now they're going to new records, and when you look at the despair that is in the streets, you can see that it is a complete failure. It is a failure for working people, but capitalism is a success for the billionaires of the world and the wealthy. Now, I even see today, and a lot of people, again, this comes back down to education. The Socialist Party USA and socialists, we believe that education should be free. And when you consider the cost of education, where it's costing students tens of thousands of dollars, and the debt is never diminishing. It is always, when you look at the interest that is being compiled, you can see people that have taken out loans for $23,000 to $26,000, maybe a little bit more. They have paid back over $40,000, and they have paid back in maybe like $30,000, $35,000. And you look at the remaining amount that they still owe on those debts are still in the tens of thousands of dollars. So when you look at solutions, and, you know, we know that capitalism is a failure. What does socialism have to offer when it comes to things like education or creating jobs for our young people after they've been educated and they get out and they can find a job? How can socialism work to offer an alternative to a failed capitalist system?
Socialism offers, I put it like this, if we can accept democracy, or supposed democracy in quotations, in our government, but we can't accept it in the one place where we spend most of our time, the workplace, there's a problem. Why
mm-hmm.
not democratize the workplace? Why not
Good
give
point.
The people who do the work, who plan out the activities, who get into the nitty-gritty of the business, the workers, the power to control the company or the organization? Why not give them that opportunity to voice their opinion, to be heard? For instance, in another aspect,
mm-hmm.
healthcare. Healthcare is not a privilege. Healthcare is a need. It is a right. It is something that everybody deserves, because we are all humans. We all need to maintain a certain level of health, and I think that should be provided for us. There needs to be a system where it is free for us. Now, another aspect, yes, is education. That goes along the same lines as healthcare. Education is not a privilege. It's a right. It's a need. It's something that should be given for free. Knowledge should be accessible to anyone. It should be free. That is the point of knowledge. Knowledge is something that should be obtained by anyone of any standard. And
well,
I think that's what socialism offers. It offers an opportunity for people to explore themselves without having the need to fear the harsh reality of life.
You know, one of the things I see, Zach, on a regular basis, I talk with young people, and when I'm sharing with them about education should be free, and they say, well, you can't have free education. When I went to college back in the 70s, education was free. But people don't realize that what they're spending for wars, it could pay for free education, and it could provide health care needs, because right now there's a lot of recruitment for young people to create jobs in the military, and here we're spending trillions of dollars, trillions, in wars overseas. These same trillions of dollars that you're spending on wars, you're going to spend on wars, or you can spend that same money on creating jobs and providing health care and education for our students. So what socialism, we offer an alternative, and what socialism offers is an alternative where we can be able to shift our priorities in society, where, as you mentioned, take care of the needs of working people as opposed to taking care of the greed for the wealthy few in our society. Zach, what I'm just going to mention that we have Zach Goldstein. He is joining us today. Zach is a young revolutionary that has supported the Alexander Mendoza campaign. He works with the Socialist Party USA, and he's joining us today to share some of his expertise of what he has done to work with the party in building the campaign for Alexander Mendoza in 2012, and also the need for socialism today. Also, I might mention he has been sharing with us some of the things he has been doing there in the northern part of California, building a local there for the Socialist Party USA. In the last few minutes, and Zach, when we get to the end, I'd like for you to get some contact information where people can be able to reach you. Zach, some of the things that I like to get into just before we end, we're going to speak a little bit about the campaign and some of the things that happened with the Peace and Freedom Party in 2012, and I think you probably have a few comments on that as well. Zach, well, where can people see any improvements in the social conditions now that Obama has been elected for president for another 4 years?
It's certainly a tricky situation that we're sort of in. Any second-term president wants to do one thing and one thing only, and that's secure their legacy as who they will be, as history will remember them as. So will President Obama push for some social domestic policy that will help the working class? I don't know. Very unlikely. The one thing that it's about time he finally is doing is he's pushing for LGBTQI rights and that particular movement. That's certainly a plus. But as for the working class as a whole, no, I don't think we'll be seeing any particular programs in the vein of, let's say, the New Deal or the Great Society on that particular level. So no, I don't think we'll be seeing any major benefits to the working class in the next 4 years.
And President Obama, I might mention, he is basically sided with the right in regards to raising any type of minimum wage where people can be able to have anywhere close to a decent standard of living. And we can see, as far as job creation, over the last 4.5 years, well, last 4 years that he's been in office, we have only received, the working people have received empty promises, and most people are making far less than what they were making even a decade ago. Now, many people said that President Obama needed another 4 years where he could be able to do many of the things that he had promised in 2007 and 2008. But in my opinion, we're going to have a lot of disappointed people, just like people that believed in George Bush, we're going to have a lot of disappointed people, even under President Obama. And we seem like we even, every day that we're getting closer and closer to another war.
At best, President Obama is a moderate Rockefeller-style Republican. You can put him in the same category as Eisenhower or Nixon. He's what the Republican Party was 20-some-odd years ago. And that every time when the Republican Party inches further and further to the right, it tags along the Democratic Party as well. And that's essentially, it's the sad truth. Every time there's a new president, especially you see this with the Democrats coming into the White House, every time when they do, there's a sense of hope and wonder for the average American worker. But that's never restored. Even under FDR, when he pushed the New Deal forward, there wasn't enough opportunities for workers to really take control and manage the economy. And that won't happen under this system, this political or economic system. So we need to look for alternatives. Yeah, so it's a sad truth. You know, we're living under, you know, the fourth term of George W. Bush, or, you know, the however many terms it's been since, you know, Ronald Reagan's first term. It's really an extension of him. All these policies kind of date back to that particular period of time.
Now, we know we have President Barack Obama, we have him for another 4 years. At least he's been elected to serve for another 4 years. Should the Socialist Party USA run a presidential candidate in 2016? Why or why not?
I'm always for it. I know it's always difficult to run a presidential campaign, as you and I both know very well. It's difficult, especially with money being influenced in politics and third parties not necessarily having enough money to put out a campaign. But I'm for it because, as I voiced at the 2011 National Convention, I want there to be on the ballot, under President of the United States, for there to be an option for a person and for a political party and a political movement that I feel comfortable giving my vote towards. Will that person win the office? The chances are unlikely, but I will know that I voted for someone who I can agree with and who shares my same concerns. I'm always for running a presidential campaign because it gives us the chance to get out there and say, we have a better system. We have an alternative system that can help you, the worker. So, yes, I'm always for it. So if the Socialist Party is going to run a presidential candidate in 2016, I'm definitely going to throw my support in that arena.
Uh-huh. When you consider, I just want to throw a couple of numbers out there. When you consider how much that the Alexander Mendoza campaign spent in 2011, 2012, for every dollar that we spent in that campaign, the Democrats and Republicans, just for Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, they spent $500,000 for every $1 that we spent. So when you look at that, I mean, when you look at the two corporate parties, when you talk about financial backing, they have financial backing at the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars every month to support those campaigns. Also, in the meantime, do you think that the SPUSA should be more focused on local campaigns? Obviously, you believe that they should have a national campaign in 2016, but should they be more focused on building local campaigns throughout the country?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I think from here until 2016 and beyond, we have opportunities to throw in our hat into the local and state level arena for politics. For instance, right now, in 2013, in an off-year election, we have elections going on here in California, in Southern California, Los Angeles, some stuff in San Bernardino County, and other places all throughout the state. And next year, year, you know, we can throw in our hat for elections for the House of Representatives or for the Senate in the years to come. I think that wherever there's an opportunity to run, whether even if it's a partisan or nonpartisan race, when there's the opportunity, we should definitely, at the very least, consider it, weigh the options, and, you know, if someone's up to the task, run. And even if the chances are against you, you can still go out there in the campaign trail and say what needs to be said.
Zach, I wanted to include this segment since I did mention that we were going to just touch very briefly on the Peace and Freedom Party and the fiasco that happened in 2012 when they ran Roseanne Barr. But I'd just like for you to take maybe a minute and a half just to speak on that. What happened? I mean, it turned out to be a disaster. What happened with that?
Well, this is a problem that the left always faces, especially when it comes to election year. Here in California, we have a very much of a tricky sort of political system. The Peace and Freedom Party has ballot access to the ballot here in the state of California. So what happens is, by law, they have to run a presidential primary. Now, the primary is non-binding, meaning whoever wins the primary doesn't necessarily get the nomination for the party. So fast forward, so that primary was held in June. Fast forward to August when they have their state convention, there were a few parties up for the nomination. There was the Socialist Party USA, with, of course, Stuart Alexander and Alex Mendoza. There was the Freedom Socialist Party with Stephen Durham, the Party for Socialism and Liberation with Peter Lindsay, and Roseanne Barr, the comedian from the series Roseanne. So what happened was, through, I would have to say, flat-out manipulation and a little bit of backroom dealing, certain parties, or a certain party, gave up their delegates at the last moment to Roseanne Barr, and she got the nomination and became the presidential candidate for the Peace and Freedom Party. Now, the reason why it's pretty controversial is because, and I'm not trying to harp on her net worth, but she has a net worth of $80 million. She suddenly became a socialist at the last second when she was supporting the more social democratic center-left policy of the Green Party. She was pretty much a Democrat throughout her entire life.
Ask you very briefly, Zach, because I have 1 minute to go, was it a mistake for them to nominate her as a presidential candidate to represent a socialist party?
Yes. No doubt about it.
And next time when you come on, we're going to get a little bit more into that, because that's a subject when socialists are making such big mistakes in regards to campaigns and also to be able to spread the movement. That was a big mistake. Zach, again, I want to express our appreciation for you joining the program. How can our listeners reach you?
Excellent question. You can always follow me on Twitter at Zach L. Goldstein. That's Zach L. Goldstein on Twitter. On Facebook, you can like the Bay Area Socialists Facebook page. You just go on Facebook and type in Bay Area Socialists or the Socialist Party of California. There are two Facebook pages there. Tell the listeners, keep on fighting the good fight. And, Stuart, it was a pleasure to be on, and thank you for having me.
And Zach, thanks for joining the program. Once again, you can be able to contact us by going to StuartAlexanderCares.com and just click on the Contact Us, and we'd be more than happy to get back with you concerning any of your comments. That's StuartAlexanderCares.com. Again, I'd like to thank Zach for joining the program, also Ruth Ann Amartavio for sponsoring this program, and we look forward to being with you once again next week. Thanks again, and have a good evening.
Good show, guys.
Thank you, Zach.
No problem.